What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for listening to Your Ex-Drinking Buddy. My name is Brennan Tassif. I'll be your host. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Check out the merch store at brennantcomedy.com/merch-store. And make sure you subscribe on YouTube as well. We'll put the shorts up there, the full video, the whole thing. Thank you so much for listening. I love it. I hope you love it. Subscribe on Patreon, too. We do bonus episodes. I do Tales from the Restaurant, where I talk about celebrities I've waited on and whether they're assholes or not, which is super fun. Also, we do a pre-show banter for my other show, Cheers from the Press Box with Joe Dorville. A lot of behind-the-scenes stuff going on over there, too. Make sure you just subscribe everywhere, just all over the place. I greatly appreciate it. And if you're not leaving the mean comments, thank you for that. Maybe leave a couple nice ones.
Grab me a beer and grab him a coat. We about to sit for an hour, bullshit and tell jokes. And please don't mix it up, cause he done sobered up. Brennan T. Comedy on your social media feeds. And Brennan Tassif is your ex-drinking buddy.
Brennan Tassif is your
ex-drinking
buddy.
Brennan Tassif is your ex-drinking buddy.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Brennan Tassif is Your Ex-Drinking Buddy. I'm your host, Brennan Tassif. If you're new to the program, quick rundown of the show. I used to be everyone's favorite drinking buddy. It was my favorite thing to do, hang out with friends, get drunk, do drugs, get in all sorts of trouble, and then reminisce about those crazy stories. I am sober now, but it's still one of my favorite things to do, hang out with somebody and reminisce about the crazy old days. Most weeks I'll be joined by a guest. This week is no exception. All the way from New York City, Patrick Hogart.
Yeah, man, I can't match that energy.
What's up? I know, I get
yes,
that a lot.
Yes, all right.
What's up, dude?
Not much. It's great to see you. I just came from the secret meetings
the
we go to now.
The super secret program.
Yeah, so I'm recovery's on my mind, alcoholism's on my mind. I'm happy to be here to hang out with an ex-drinking buddy. I don't know you. I just met you today, but I have a feeling we know each other.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? Experience, strength, and hope. Yeah. Before we get too far into anything, you have a special out. Plug everything. Let everybody know what's going on. Tell the people.
Yeah, so I have a special called Qualification. It's all about recovery and drinking. It's my whole story.
I didn't even put two together until you just said it right then.
Yeah, and if you don't know, like if you go to a meeting and you hear somebody tell their story, that's what's called delivering a qualification. So, yeah, I got asked to do this. I've done comedy at like probably dozens of program conventions over the years. And this one was like, hey, we want you to come back this year. Can you come do it? Only thing is we don't have a budget this time. I was like, well, maybe we can trade. Like, maybe I could bring some cameras. I want to shoot this special. Maybe I could do it there. I'll hide the audience.
Full disclosure?
Yeah.
That's the greatest audience for stuff
totally.
Like that.
Totally. They're great.
Because I've done some storytelling. Like, I do a lot of bits about my drinking days. Yeah. And in like at the stand where it's all espresso martinis and finance bros, doesn't play as well. Right. When I do it at like a meeting, like if they're doing like a thing and they're like, oh, come do comedy, like a fundraiser or something, it fucking crushes.
They're the best crowd. I was nervous,
dude,
too.
Dude, that's so awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And I went on stage at like 12, 10 of in course. The morning. It was crazy. And everybody's hopped up on Red Bulls. They're all vaping. They're all trying to get laid. You know, it's like an overnight conference and it was a great crowd.
One of those YPG things.
So anyway, that exists on all the platforms right now. It's been out since April. You can go on Amazon, YouTube, Play, or I don't even know how to say this. Comedy Dynamics put it out.
Beautiful. We'll link it in the bio.
Yeah, so look that up. It's going to switch to YouTube for free, I think, in the next month or so. And the other big thing that is recovery adjacent is I made this documentary with Joe List called Tom Dustin, Portrait of a Comedian.
I've been excited to see that.
Yeah, and that has a big like recovery-oriented angle to it. And that's... We just put up the first 20 minutes of it for free on YouTube, or you can buy it on Punch Up Live. It's a great, we're really proud of it.
I remember when he was playing that at IFC.
Yeah, because
I was like, oh, I want to see it, but I worked at the restaurant to supplement my income, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
And it was for like one night, and I was like, motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we're really proud of it, and it's hilarious, it's deep, it's about recovery. There's a lot of hilarious drinking stories in there. Joe's very public about his recovery. He's been on your show.
Absolutely.
But his buddy, They're ex-drinking buddies. Yeah. I mean, it's, if this podcast was a documentary, well, this might be it.
It's funny you say that, because originally the idea for the podcast was called Drinking Buddies, because this was in 2010 when podcasts first started becoming a thing. Me and my college buddy, Dan, who's been on the show, would just get hammered and just talk shit about stuff.
Yeah.
He was like a nerd kid into tech, and I love Star Wars, and we would talk about video games. And I was like, oh, we should make this a podcast where we just like review stuff and get hammered and call it Drinking Buddies.
Yeah.
So we did that. We recorded like 5 episodes, never put it out. And then fast forward like 15 years, I was like, that's actually a good idea to talk about. And so I threw an X in the front of it. Yeah. And I was like, oh, call it X Drinking Buddy.
I love that two active drunks can't get their act together to put a podcast out.
We recorded a bunch, but this is back when getting an RSS feed was hard. This isn't like the days of Libsyn where you just plug it in.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because I noticed, and I'm sure you have the same experience, I noticed I would tell people, like, oh, yeah, that reminds me of this one time.
Yeah,
like, I got so drunk, this happened. And people would always go, that's crazy. One time I got so drunk, this happened. Yeah. And I went, oh, that's the podcast.
Totally.
That's the show.
Yeah.
And when I had List on, he said something that in all the years of being drunk and sober and stuff, I never even thought about. He was like, yeah, for that portion of my life, I was either drunk, drinking, or hungover. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's the whole thing,
totally,
man.
Totally.
So let's talk about you.
Yeah.
This is a question I ask all my guests because I find it fascinating.
Okay.
Comedy would be considered a niche thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I have guests come into the restaurant and they go, oh, I love comedy. And I'll be like, who's your favorite comedian? And they'll be like, Jerry Seinfeld. And I'm like, you don't know comedy then. Like, so how did you even find, because we're a little close to the same age, how did you even find stand-up?
Yeah, so I grew up a fan of stand-up. I wanted to be a comedian since I was a kid. I grew up in a sort of weird house where, like, watching comedy was like an escape.
Okay.
So throughout high school, I'm 44, so the Tom Green show came out while I was in high school. Comedy Central kept playing these Andy Kaufman documentaries.
Oh,
and I was like,
I
want to be a
those.
Weird comedian, you know? And then I went to college, and I did some comedy.
Where did you grow up?
Up in the Hudson Valley of New York. Went to college in Long Island.
Got it.
I was, like, New York City adjacent. I did a open mic. I did, like, 3 open mics in Times Square at Hamburger Harry's when I was 18, 19 years old. And I sucked. So I was like, I'm never doing that again. And I also discovered drinking at the exact same time.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, I'll just drink a whole bunch, start a band, and try to be funny in between songs. In between.
You're not the first person on the show who does comedy who's done that.
It's a pattern, man. So I
want to ask, I don't mean to cut you off, but I love little details. I'm obsessed with like how things happen. When you say you were into comedy as a kid, do you remember the first time? Because I remember the very first time I saw stand-up. Do you remember, like, did your parents introduce you to it? Were you flipping through the channels?
Yeah.
Like, how did you find it?
I mean, Comedy Central started when we were kids.
Yeah.
And I remember they literally just played stand-up. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was, like, the club camera. It was just the back brick wall and just, like, never-ending loop of stand-up.
So you found Comedy Central and you were like, okay, this is the thing.
Yeah, I remember John Panette from when I was,
love
like,
John
10
Panette.
Years old.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many, like, eight, it was like late 80s, early 90s mm-hmm. comedy that me and my siblings would watch. And then, like, the older I got, the more refined or whatever. Oh, and Dice. Like, we passed around this one Dice cassette, me and my friends. Like, it was a porn tape because it was so dirty and so racist that we were like, our parents can't know we know this stuff.
Find this, yeah.
And then the Adam Sandler albums were huge with me and my friends. Jerky Boys.
So you found it, you found it very organically.
Yeah.
Like, porn in the woods, in a sense, where it was just like, and then you start, because I tell this all the time, and the listeners will probably say this, but for us, when I was in high school, because I am a few years younger, it was Dane Cook. When Harmful of Swallowed came out, we could burn the CD and we would just pass it out to everybody.
Yeah.
And that was, and I remember at 12 years old watching Comedy Central Presents.
Yeah.
And then Dane was like the thing where it was like, how you guys were doing with the Dice cassette, we were doing with the Dane CD.
Yeah,
where
I mean,
it was like,
and he's such a big performer.
Yeah.
He looks like a rock star.
Yeah. That was the thing where I was like, oh, this is super cool.
Yeah.
So for you, I want to ask, when you go to school in Long Island and you decide to come into the city, how old are you when you first start doing that? Is this right when you get there?
The first open mics, no, it was the summer after freshman year.
Okay.
I was interning in Manhattan and I saw the sign in the front window of Hamburger Harry's open mic Wednesday nights. And what's her face from the Strip was running it. Gladys Simon.
Oh, really?
Was running it. She hosted it. And I remember her bragging at the top of the show, I discovered Jim Gaffigan here. Zach Galifianakis has been through here. All the stars have done my open mic, and then I hung out until 1 in the morning when I finally got to go up. I bombed, and then I took the train back to Long Island. Flash forward, all these years later, I was in 1 or 2 years into stand-up as a 32-year-old, and I do Gladys's mic at the Strip, and I pay the fucking $25 or whatever.
Damn.
It's like a racket there. I do the open mic, and she opens the show, and she says, I discovered Jim Gaffigan. I discovered Zach Galifianakis. I know all the stars. And then do the show. After the show, she says, first of all, your hair is terrible. Nobody's doing hair like that. And I have...
You have beautiful hair.
Yeah, I have nice hair.
You have beautiful hair.
My wife was like, no, that lady doesn't know what she's talking about. Anyway.
That is so funny.
It's such a weird, I wanted to do it so bad. I discovered drinking. I drank for 9 years, got sober, became a workaholic. 5 years into sobriety, I started doing comedy.
Okay.
That's the quick outline.
So that's fascinating. So you... Yeah. Did a couple of open mics at Hamburger Harry's, and then you were like, I'm...
And some on my college campus, I would do every talent show. I would always do some weird... I tried guitar comedy. I was a rapper for many years.
Yes, you were.
The bands. So I was always trying to get on stage to express myself in a humorous way. I always wanted to be funny on stage.
I want to ask, because I find this fascinating, and we're going to get to this, because you sent me a bunch of stories, but with the performing... Because I find this so interesting because I have a similar trajectory where I was like, I want to do stand up, go to college to play football. 2 years in, I get my 8th concussion. They're like, you can't play anymore. So then I was like, well, what am I going to do now? Let me finally try stand up.
Yeah.
I'm drinking out of control. I'm going to Mike's hammered like every 2 to 3 months. But of course, I change all my stuff to @BrennanTComedy because I'm a comedian now. I have a bit where I talk about... I got pulled over for my first DUI, and I had done 2 open mics, and they go, what do you do? What's your job? And I said, oh, I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
And then in the police report, it says, comma, actually was very funny. And I was like, oh, this is fucking great. I'm making
it. You got passed.
Yeah, I got passed by Palm Beach County.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting thing because I was in and out of comedy and never fully committed until I got sober, really sober in 2018. Because I kept relapsing before. And then when I finally woke up in the hospital being told you should be dead, I was like, all right, we got to figure this out.
Yeah.
And then I got sober, got back into comedy, and then I really hit the ground running. So the reason I say all of that is to kind of relate to you in the sense where it's like, what was the experience like? So you bomb at a couple mics, and then are you just like, I'm fucking done with this?
Yeah, it was the classic black and white thinking that we learn in the rooms. People say, just show up one day at a time. It's progress, not perfection. I didn't have that information yet or those tools. So when I'm young and I suck at comedy, I'm like, I'm not doing that again. If I'm not great at this, I'm not doing it. Like I almost had this entitlement of like, well, I love comedy. I deserve to be good at it. And I deserve to get a lot of laughs from all these strangers, but it's not,
because I really like it.
Yeah. They're not just giving it to me. So I'll just go do other shit and avoid it. I avoided the hard work. Like,
yeah.
The hard work of it.
Did you have, this is something I want to ask you because I think you of all people could relate to this. Did you have good stage presence because you had watched so much comedy?
Not first. When I did those first open mics, I don't think I had any clue how to be on stage. I did some high school talent shows with rapping or whatever, but I didn't know, I didn't quite know what to do on stage for stand up where there's not. But then when I started the band in college and then all those years, it was probably like 5 or 6 solid years of gigging out, playing punk shows or the rap.
Fuck yeah.
My rap stuff was basically a character. I was on stage a lot, and I was doing weird open mics. Like, I actually did the Creek in the Cave open mic before the Creek was a comedy club.
Really?
Open mic there in 2004 with me and a weird violinist and a weird host, and I fucking rapped in front of 4 people for like multiple songs because they're like, yeah, do as many as you want. But I say all that because I was just getting a ton of experience being on stage, building stage presence, being confident in things being weird. Like, you ever watch a stand-up comic, like the cable falls out, they don't know what to do, they panic.
I see it all the time.
They say, it's in a room where you can go a cappella, but they still hold the mic because they need the security blanket holding something. Like, all that shit never affected me because I went through this like crazy hazing period.
The trial by fire.
Yeah. So
because there was, it was when I remember when I got back into comedy, I had done, I mean, over the course of like probably 9 years, I had done a fair amount of like shows and open mics and stuff.
So and you also had a lot of court appearances where you had to perform in front of people.
Absolutely. So, but it wasn't one of those things where I came back into it. I was just mimicking as far as stage presence, like Dane or like these high energy comics that I saw. Like, I mean, later in life, Josh Adam Myers was another guy where you're like walking around and pacing the stage. And so I was just kind of doing, because I remember I first came back and someone in my family came to see a show. And this was a compliment, like a backhanded compliment I got a lot, where people would go, "Your stage presence is astounding. If you could just find someone to write you some jokes." And I was like, "All right, thanks, Dad."
I got that a lot. You seem really comfortable up there.
And I was like, that's a hard one. It is. You had mentioned something that I wanted to bring up, which is the rapping and the getting on stage and the wanting to be on stage.
Yeah.
Was that something you had discovered as like a kid of like, oh, I like being the center of attention?
So there was alcoholism in my house growing up. Parents got divorced at a young age. There's three of us. We're all unplanned pregnancies. Childhood was good. Our parents did great for what was going on. They did great. I'm grateful for my childhood. Those are the disclaimers. I didn't speak until I was in like fourth grade. I was just like so shy. I was so quiet. There's probably lowercase trauma involved. There's a reason kids don't speak. Yep. I also pissed the bed until fifth or sixth grade.
Let's go. We're the same person.
Stuff was going on, you know? And then fifth grade, sixth grade, I discovered that by roasting the week, I could make my friends think I was cool. So I became a cruel,
a bully.
Fucking bully, verbal abuser type of person. But I would get laughs. I discovered I was funny, you know? So I really leaned into that. And then in middle school, I got bullied because I had long hair. I looked like a girl. And then in high school, I was like, all right, I don't want to be the bully anymore. I'll still be funny, but I'll charm everyone. I'll win everyone over. And I was the prom king and the homecoming king.
Let's fucking go.
The fucking school newspaper, like student government. I was like, really trying, and I didn't drink. I promised myself I would never drink.
I wanted to ask you about that. That was actually literally the next question I was going to ask.
And I was like, all my friends are drinking. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to be like Dad. I'll just get drunk.
We all have a through line. The same through line.
And I was literally like, I'll just get drunk on external validation is kind of what I never consciously thought, but like that's clearly what was going on. It was like, please love me. Please make me feel special and important. And humor was
make
a huge
me feel
way.
Valued.
Yeah.
Give
so,
me value.
Yeah. A lot of pranks, a lot of like jokes and one-liners during class. Not class clown, but like trying to be funny.
Same.
As often as possible. Yeah.
I discovered that because my brother, I'm a pretty smart guy. And my brother makes me look like an idiot child.
Oh, wow.
Like my brother is like a beautiful mind smart. Mm. But I remember a similar thing. Like it wasn't my dad. Like everyone in my family drinks and, you know, they can all get after it. But my ex-stepdad was incredibly abusive and stuff. And I was like, oh, drinking is poison.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so I'm never going to do that. Same thing. I wasn't a class clown, but I was also very much like, if somebody said something, you open the door, I'm fucking taking it. And a lot of people in my family were in sales. So I discovered at a young age, look someone in the eye,
firm
handshake. How we doing in the room, kind of Vince Vaughn style, like here we go. But it is a fascinating thing. You know, they say all the time, hurt people, hurt people. Yeah, so I got bullied relentlessly because I didn't hit my growth spurt till I was a senior in high school. I was always a fat kid.
Oh.
And so I got the shit like kicked out of me. I got bullied a lot. And then as I got older, especially into high school, late middle school, high school, I realized that I would get bullied. But then if I bullied the younger, the weaker, then the people who were bullying me would laugh.
Yeah,
they would still bully me, but then they would laugh.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to be like, oh, this is horrific.
It's like
what
shit,
are you doing?
Shit rolls downhill.
Yeah. And so it was one of those things. And then I've said this a million times, but when I finally got to college, I was like, I'm going to change my life. Because I went to school to be a Division I athlete, and I was still worried in the back of my head about getting bullied. Because I got bullied until my senior year. Yeah. Like, all this stuff doesn't come from nowhere.
Dude,
like,
it's crazy how ingrained this stuff is.
Yeah. And then I got to college, and I flipped it.
Yeah.
But for you, you said in high school you got to the point where you were like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah, I became full-on, like, politician, basically.
There you go. You got the hair for it. You got the hair for it.
And my friends would make fun of me. They're like, oh, there he goes, politicking again. And I resented that. But looking back, I'm like, I was literally just trying to win people over. I was trying to get
your
vote.
You're the prom king, for God's sake.
Trying to get your vote. And I didn't even run for that, by the way. I want to make that clear. There was no running for any of this shit. But there's no running from it either.
There we go. So yeah, the title of the episode.
So I hid from drinking through high school, and then I got to college where it was just like, oh, well, now I'm not. I'm nobody here.
Yeah.
And
big school, small school?
Small school in Long Island.
Northeast school.
Long Island University, D2 football.
Okay.
It's
an interesting thing because I talk to a lot of people from the Northeast now that I live here. And I come from this SEC country, like the South.
What was the school?
So I went to Florida Atlantic, which was in the Sun Belt at the time. Now we're in Conference USA. So it's a Division I school, but it's non-Power 4.
Okay. I don't know what any of that means, but I'll pretend like I do.
It's if we won every game, we would compete in the playoffs. Yeah. But we're not like one of the teams where they're like, oh, they should be in the playoff. But I had a lot of friends go to like Florida State. These are like 70,000 kid campuses.
Yeah, yeah.
So like I talked to like friends up here and they're like, yeah, I went to Manhattan or I went to Long Island. And like 10,000 kids. And even my school, which was a small school in Florida, was 36,000 kids.
Yeah, I do a lot of colleges now and it's weird. It's hard crazy flex. Diverse, like the size variance, that's the word.
Yeah.
I didn't sleep last night. I stayed up until 2 a.m. watching Sicario.
I did the same thing like last week.
It's not before bed movies, you know. That's like some violent.
It came up on Netflix, and I was like, I haven't seen this in a while.
It's so good.
It's so good.
It's crazy. But yeah, at college, I was like, all right, I guess I'll join in. I loved it. I was 18. Yeah, I waited till I was 18.
Coming from a background that we come from, that is a bit like for a lot of people listening, you might think like, oh, I was the popular kid in high school. We drank at house parties. But I can speak for myself and my experience. I was like, I know what this does. I'm not going to do that to myself. And then
I knew I didn't need it. Yeah. You're funny.
Fucking running for mayor.
I was actually. I was the naked guy at parties while I drank, but I was the naked guy at parties before I drank.
Really?
We would do these outside mountain parties, we call them. We would build a huge bonfire. I would go take a solo cup, get naked in the woods, cover my dick with it, and run and jump over the fire like a gazelle. And this is 100% sober. This is just adolescent fucking hormones, wanting attention type shit.
What's the old Tom Rhodes bit? I thought it would liven up the party at the time.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, So I did not need to get drunk, and I knew it was in the family. And I wish I just never picked it up. But it's like, how do you know? You can't.
So what happens when you get to college? Because you said everyone's doing it. I guess I'll do it. But there has to be a mental break. Because for me, it was my twin sister inviting me to a party she was having at the house. And I was like, I'm not cool. I don't have any friends. I never get invited to this kind of stuff. Even though it's my sister, we're twins and we're super close now, but we weren't close at the time. So in my head, I made a conscious decision to be like, oh, I'm going to be like everyone else and I'm going to drink.
Yeah, it was basically that. Like I felt like a nobody. It was 6 weeks into my freshman year. My friends from home who all did drink, like I was their designated driver in high school, and they drank hard. They were the cool kids. They literally called themselves the Booze Hounds. The Booze Hounds came to my campus to visit. And they called me Sober Holbert. That was literally my nickname before I ever drank.
Great nickname.
The way I tell this story, I do like an alcohol awareness show at colleges. So I always say like, I didn't have it in me to say, oh, I'm Sober Holbert. I don't drink. I don't imbibe the devil's elixir, you know? Like I couldn't say that. And like the Booze Hounds were like, dude, you don't have a car. You don't have to drive us anywhere. Everybody's drinking. Just have a few. See if you like it. So I drank 3 cans of Coors that first night with my best friends. Beer. Yeah, it was fucking warm. But it like literally felt like magic potion. Like I got the perfect amount of drunk. I was funnier than ever. I connected with people way even easier than I always knew how. And
anxious? Because that was my thing. And I talked to some people in the program and on the show about this was my thing was anxiety. I always was super high strung. And the first time I did a shot, that kind of just went away. And I was like,
Yeah, it was there was probably anxiety of feeling like, oh, how do I, like, I think I was always doing that politician math of like, how do I win these people over? How do I get in? Who are the cool people?
What do I say? What do I not say?
Yeah. And yeah, that all did go away. And I always say, very honestly, if I could drink like that to this day, literally have 2 or 3 cans of beer and have a fucking hilarious night, I would still be drinking.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Of course, that's not what happened.
Nah.
Yeah. So that's where it all changed. I mean, by that summer, so that was October of 99, by summer 2000, when I was interning and doing those open mics, I was like, I think what happened was I knew I wanted to be a comedian. I sucked at it so bad. So I just was like, I'll drink the feeling of bombing away.
Yeah.
Because I discovered Captain and Cokes that summer from a guy. I stayed on campus. I didn't want to go back to the house I grew up in. Stayed in campus all summer, and we drank Captain and Cokes every fucking day.
Captain freshman year, that was what I got drunk on every single day.
Yeah, and I didn't think about how, oh, I wish I was trying comedy like I promised myself I would. I just was like, let's party. Let's throw barbecues. Let's have a good time. So, yeah, within those first 10 months of my drinking, I became a full-on binge drinker, is what I think the textbooks would call it, you know?
Yeah, that's I remember it clear as day because I had football to dump, because I'm an addict by nature. Like, even when I was a kid and I wasn't drinking, it was video games, mm-hmm. it was whatever it was.
Sugar for me.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Oh, God. That's something I struggle with so hard to this day.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble like getting down back to like the weight I was when I first got to New York around like 2:30.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll just cut out sugar. No problem. I won't eat after work because at the restaurant you run around. And then if I come home, just drink a bunch of water and go to sleep. I wake up, I feel good. Yeah. I feel svelte. And I was like, I'll cut out sugar. Dude, I made it like 4 days. And then last night I was like, I want something sweet. So I went and bought brownies. Dude, and I was like, come on, man.
It's so hard. Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. I quit cigarettes. I quit drinking. I quit cocaine.
Don't worry.
With sugar, I'm like... Yeah. I can grab that Snickers bar.
Sugar is the most powerful white powder.
Don't worry,
it only gets worse with marriage. So congratulations, but
thank you.
enjoy your body now.
Yeah, it's rough. So I wanted, because this is fascinating to me, the point where you start drinking and stuff, because I had a similar trajectory where I was playing football, I was addicted to like the program and football, and then when that left, I started drinking, and then I started doing comedy. But you said something very succinct that I resonate with, which is the whole, I was starting to drink so much that I was like, I don't want to keep the promises that I made to myself. Yeah. Even school, I went from getting A's and B's to getting C's and D's.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I barely graduated by the skin of my teeth, like, because D's are passing in Florida. And it was just one of those things where it was like, oh, I don't care about anything anymore. And then I remember one summer I was dating someone. We tried to do long distance. She had cheated on me a bunch while we were dating. Mm. Then we tried to do long distance. And the only way I could sleep was to drink myself to blackout.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember we talk about it in the Super Secret program, but there is a point you will reach where you cross a line and you can never go back.
Yeah, yeah.
And that summer is when I crossed that line, because then I couldn't operate at all without drinking.
Yeah.
So... you said you were binge drinking, which is different.
Yeah.
What was the point where you were like, uh-oh, this is a little too far?
I made it through college by the skin of my teeth because there's like a lot of cops and legal stuff. But I got through. I started working in Manhattan. I worked in TV production, which is crazy. It's like party all the time. You know, drink as much as you want as long as you meet your deadlines, all that stuff. And, in 2008, I was 27. I was with this girl I thought I was going to marry. And I started drinking every day. And she at first thought she liked that I liked to party a lot.
Yeah.
And I worked hard. I was
The fun.
Yeah. I was like,
it's always fun.
Yeah. And
people never realize.
Yeah. And, it went from, it went from like partying a lot. Oh, like I had a cool job. I was making decent money. And I think she saw me as a viable partner. And then we moved in together. I always tell people, a year into the relationship, she's asking me to stop drinking. We're fighting all the time. We're shouting at each other in the street. So after a year of being together, we did what we thought was best for the relationship. And we moved in together. Because if you're going to build a home with somebody, you should make sure the foundation is crumbling. It's a lot like that movie. What's that movie that won a bunch of awards? Our relationship, it was like the Titanic. So like that's how we moved in together. And then she was really like, you have to quit drinking. You have to go to therapy. And I was like, I'll compromise. I just won't go out anymore. So I'll drink at home. And we would be watching episodes of Intervention on like a work night, you know? And I'd be on the other end of the couch drinking 9 beers and being like, those people need help is literally what I would say. And, Yeah, we went on this trip. I did successfully. I would quit for like a week at a time, but then I'd always like go back. I'd make all these promises. I'd do pretty good, and then we'd have some crazy drama. Like it was like 30 times in 2 years that we had these crazy dramas. But anyway, we ended up in Italy on this vacation, and I just was like a monster. Like I didn't hit her, but I was like verbally abusing her. I broke up with her on the first night of a 10-day trip to Italy. Like it was this beautiful romantic trip. And I truly wanted to marry this person, but I just couldn't control what happened when I started drinking. And yeah, long story short, like I quit on that trip, basically convinced her to stay on the trip, not to break up with me. I admitted, like I finally just said out loud, I know I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. I know I need to quit. Didn't drink, came back to New York City, fucking dramatic relapse night. And then that next morning, my brother, who was sober, he was like 3 years sober. She's on the phone with him, and he's like, "Yeah, you got to kick him out if he's not going to stop, because this is just going to keep happening."
It is. It is, people, because you know the line of work we do, we're in the public eye and stuff. People will come to me, and it's my sobriety is very well known. I've it's kind of, I hate saying this word, but it's kind of the brand is like the sober guy. But that with that comes a lot of people coming up to me. Hey, so and so's doing this and that, and I go, like one Al-Anon, and two, like you have to leave.
Yeah.
It's so interesting when people come to me and they're like, my significant other won't stop drinking. Yeah. What are my options? And I go, you have one.
Yeah.
You have to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, no. And I go, you don't, like, you're not listening to me.
We will stay and push and give us an inch. We'll take a mile. Like,
it is a hard truth. People don't want to hear it. Cause when you're like, well, no, they just, their drinking's out of control, but I still love them. I go, you're not listening to me. The more you stay, the more you're reinforcing their behavior.
Yeah. You're actually helping them. Like that joke people say is like, I found my bottom and then I decorated. Yeah. Like you're actually helping them decorate.
100%.
So that whole thing in Italy, basically it confirmed all the fear I had about ever starting to drink. Like, cause I went from like the fun party drunk guy to like a monstrous, like making my partner feel unsafe. Like, I don't know what I am capable of doing next. Like that really freaked me out. So I was like, all right, I'm actually done now. And thank God it stuck. I'm lucky that
that's awesome.
Like I loved, going to, I finally did start going to therapy and then meetings. And I just loved it all from the start. Like I was never like, oh, maybe, I guess I did in the beginning. I was like, I'll do this for a year.
Yeah.
And I actually wasn't going to do meetings. So I did 7 months without meetings. I just went to therapy once a week because I had such a bias against the program because it like didn't work for my dad or whatever. And, but then the relationship still didn't work out and we did move out. And then I was like, all right, I really, should check out these meetings.
See what's going on. It's the one thing I found, and then we'll get into the stories, I promise. The one thing I found, though, that was perplexing to me was always being, if I'm in a room and I'm not with my brother, a lot of times I'm one of the smarter people in the room. Yeah. And I like to surround myself with really, like, one of my closest friends is a patent lawyer. Yeah. You know, I have another friend who's an accountant. My brother-in-law is an accountant, and he's like a fucking genius with the thing. You know, my fiance is a teacher. Like, it's all very, like, I try
to. You invited me here today. It's crazy.
I try to surround myself with, the best of the best. But it is interesting because then when I went into the rooms, I was kind of like, oh, you guys are just weak.
You can't
figure this out.
Yeah.
And then I kept relapsing. Kept relapsing. And it took me a long time to be like, oh, you guys are right.
Yeah. What do they say? What do they say? It's a dumb program for smart people or a smart
program? It's a simple program for smart people. I've always heard.
Yeah. And I've heard that over and over. Like it is possible to be too smart for it.
And then I see it because there's other people in my life who are very, very smart. And they're just like, no, that's not if my brain can do this, there's no way my brain can't do that. And I'm like, that's not how it works. Dude,
It's crazy.
So I want to talk about it. Some of these stories. You glanced on it, and so we'll go back. College arrests. What was going on there?
So I have this thing deep in me that I don't think the rules should apply to me, and that's a problem I face today, 17 years sober. But when I drank, that was on steroids, and I had an obsession with climbing buildings, breaking into buildings, exploring buildings. So every single building on the campus I went to, I have been naked on top of, I've pissed off of, and I've probably broken into. And one arrest was, we broke into this new rec center. They put an Olympic-sized pool in there. Oh, so we get me and some buddies and some girls. We're like, let's go skinny dipping. We dive in the pool. It's not even finished. It's like raw concrete inside, and it's probably not even chemically safe to be in.
It's just tap water in there?
But we're in this pool. The girls disappear at one point.
How are you getting into these
cops
places?
Cops come in. These were just unlocked doors in the middle of the night. Like, just like.
I thought you were like Michael Weston in Burn Notice, like coming through the ceiling.
Yeah, like Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible. No, just like testing, trying windows and doors. There's always an open door. which is dangerous.
So many great lines
which
in this
is
episode.
Dangerous for me to say out loud because I still want to steal shit. I did a recovery gig recently, within the last 2 years, I won't say where, is at this church where this group has, this church has meetings there. They have the window shades with the steps and everything. Yeah. So they have a permanent residency, basically, at this church. They have a stage. The church has a stage and a sound system, and they want to do a comedy fundraiser. And I go there, and I look in the side room. There's piles of PA equipment, three drum sets, good gear. Like, I think they had mic preamps like that. Like, good shit everywhere, but it's all a mess. It's like piles of cables, spaghetti
together.
No one's
keeping track of that.
They couldn't get the sound system working. I had to build a sound system to make the show happen. And I started looking around, and I'm like, I'm going to put some of this shit in my car. They don't deserve to have this.
They don't even know it's here.
It's like a church youth group or something. I'm like, and I play drums. I'm like, I'm going to steal a fucking drum set. I literally start doing the math of how can I, while the feature act is on stage, how can I start filling my car with this equipment from a church? And this is at 15 years sober. So that's where I didn't do it, by the way.
Yeah.
I did call a fellow to talk it out, and he's like, yeah, you're insane. So I want to steal shit. I want to break into places. I want to explore. I want to be where I don't belong because I get a rush out of it. So anyway, the girls disappear. We're still in the pool. Campus police come. The girls take off with the piles of clothes. So they disappear.
So you're just naked.
Me and my buddy are ass naked in the pool, and the cops are like, come on, guys. And they know us by name at this point. They've had so many interactions with us. They're like, all right, Alan, Patrick, let's go. And we're like, we don't have clothes. And our friends, we think the clothes are in the locker room, but our friends, they're like, there's nobody back there. So they had to go get the ambulance from campus to bring like bed sheets. This is also the dead of winter. It's February.
And it's cold up here.
It's brittle cold. So we're wrapped in bed sheets, like hospital grade bed sheets, put in the ambulance.
Soaking wet.
Brought to the campus police station. So that's an arrest.
Well, did you have a lot of... Because when I went to college, we didn't have campus police. We contracted out to the Boca Raton Police Department.
Yeah.
So when I got arrested in college, it's like... like some people, like I know at the University of Florida, they had like campus police and they'd like wag a finger and put you in a holding cell and scare you into being like, I'm so sorry. But when we got in trouble, we got legitimately booked and processed.
Yeah.
Was that the same for you or was it campus?
Not that night. So the time it happened that way was a week before commencement. We party all day. We have a barbecue. I love barbecues as a drunk. You start drinking at 9 in the morning. Yeah. Fucking build a fire. Get sharp cooking utensils, lose all your motor skills. What could go wrong, you know? So we do that all day. And around 1 in the morning, I said to my buddy Josh, I'm like, dude, you know what we need more than anything right now? It's 1 in the morning. We're both bombed. He's like, what, girls? I'm like, no, cereal. So we break into the food hall. We get chased down by campus police again. They bring us to the campus station again. And I'm like, I'm going to put on a comedy show, but I'm going to roast these guys. I want to entertain Josh. So I was like, hey, guys, I like your uniforms. Do you get to wear those when you work mall security?
No.
And they hated that joke. And they're like,
did Josh like it? Were you
Josh
with
did
Josh?
Like it. Yeah. And they're like, guys, get back in the car. We're going to the town station. So we get driven off campus. We go to the Muttontown Police Department.
Are you worried
which is a real
at any
town.
Point?
No, because while I'm drunk, I'm so cocky. I'm so entitled.
Yeah.
At that point, I felt like I ran the school because I was like the TV station manager.
The mayor.
I was in this band. All the best parties on campus were in our dorm. I was such a fucking cocky, arrogant asshole. Like, I really thought I was a rock star. That's why I didn't care about not going back to comedy, because the drinking enhanced this, like, personality disorder where I really thought I was the shit. And I was like, well, I'm in this cool band. I have the cool dorm. I make a TV show. Everybody thinks I'm cool. Meanwhile, I know for a fact everybody was like, he is losing it. Yeah. Like, he is really turning into this douchebag. So, yeah, while I'm drunk and I'm making fun of these cops, I think I'm the fucking man. So they bring us to the town jail where...
Muttontown.
Yeah, Muttontown. Two cops are writing us up. And I say this in a story. I actually am now in that place where I'm like, did I actually say this? Or is this what I wrote to make it a funnier story? But I was like, hey, officer, you're really good on that computer. I didn't know pigs could type. And they were like, fuck you. Get back in the car. We're going to Nassau County Jail. So we get back.
You're getting booked.
Yes. And there we're you're going to see the judge in the morning. So we get brought to our third jail, essentially.
Is Josh along for the ride, or is he like, what the fuck are you doing?
No, he's there the whole time. He has... So we grew up together. We went to high school together, middle school and high school together. We ended up at the same college. We're best friends. He's the best guy. He's like, would give you the shirt off his back to this day. Whenever I tell this story, he's like, it wasn't that bad, dude. But like... he wouldn't have been stuck in this shitty situation if I didn't keep running my mouth. So I have a lot of... I made amends to him about many things, but this was one of them, is that I just always dragged him along. And I think he always wanted to protect me because I was like smaller than him. He played football too. I think he wanted me to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
But he was also like, just like not gonna whatever. So anyway, we ended up in Nassau County Jail, got arraigned the next morning, probation, community service. We get disinvited to commencement. They're like, if you invited your family, tell them not to come. We don't want you here.
Wow.
But because I'm such an entitled shit, I get some professors to write these like letters of to vouch for
character us. Character letters, yeah.
Yeah, and it worked. And they're like, okay, fine, you guys can come. And I always say, like, that is a turning point in my life where I have shame that I wasn't held more accountable because I didn't learn anything. The only thing I learned is like, if you want to drink however you want or behave however you want, you just got to learn how to manipulate the right people. You got
to learn how to say sorry the right way.
Yeah. And that only works for like double life alcoholism or politics, you know?
Yeah. I did the same thing my senior year. I remember I had taken this history, every single class this history professor offered, and I just stopped showing up.
Yeah.
And I sent him an email and I was like, listen, man, I'm not going to have enough credits to graduate unless I get a C in this class. I was like, you know me. And it was genuine.
Yeah.
Because the reason I say to people I got so many second chances is because when I was sober and people saw me for who I was, they knew I was a good person.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then when I drank, that kind of turned.
Yeah.
And so people would always give me another chance because they're like, we know that he's a good person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I use that to my advantage, dude, all the time.
We are so similar.
It's I would crazy. Be like, you know me. Like, yeah. I love your class. I'm a student of history. Yeah, like, yeah. I love this.
Yeah.
I know I didn't show up this year. I'm going through a lot. Please just give me the C.
The sincere email. I wrote so many of those
transcripts
emails.
Came out, C+.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's go.
Dude, that...
I still feel... This is 15 years ago. I still feel like shit about
it. In 2025... And I don't want to come on here and be the ultra woke guy or whatever, but like, I do believe we have a certain, you are a handsome guy, you're a white guy. That gets us so much extra leeway. I went on a flight from a cruise with the Booze Hounds in 2006. We got hammered for 6 days straight on a Carnival cruise. We went purposely to drink, you know? Mm-hmm. On the flight home from Tampa, Florida, I get on a JetBlue flight, fucking wasted. I talk my way into the cockpit to bullshit with the pilots, take selfies. As I go to my seat, I pick up the intercom, the thing you can address. Yeah. I said, hey, everybody, welcome to JetBlue Karaoke. Who wants to come up and sing a song? I'm wasted talking shit. This is post 9/11. This is post 9/11. I'm killing with them. Like, and then she was like, you got to hang it up. I was like, all right, I'm sitting wherever, but are there any empty rows? I need to lay down and go to bed. She's like, yeah, let me show you a row you can lay down. And she brings me to the back of the plane and shows me where to lay down. Like, that's because of what I look like.
Yeah, 100%.
And that, like, I wasn't a violent drunk. You know what I mean? And, like, so I think, like, talking my way out of shit. So I always acknowledge that when I tell this story. Like, I do think privilege is real. And, 100%. Like, I benefited from it repeatedly as an active alcoholic. That's fucked up. It's like hard to.
It's one of those things where I've been arrested 8 times, like arrested. Like, you know, I've had where guns were drawn. I've been in real trouble. I've spent months and months incarcerated. At the longest stretch at one point was 4.5 months. Like, I've been,
yeah.
And I talked to my co-host for my other podcast, my sports podcast, Cheers from the Press Box, that I do with my buddy Joe Isidore. And he's a black guy from Atlanta. And it's, well, he's originally from Florida, but lives in Atlanta. And it's so interesting because it wasn't until doing that show with him and meeting him and like talking every single week where I started, because you see these things on the news and you go, yeah, obviously I have white privilege. But in my head, I was always like, yeah, but I've been arrested so many times. Like, how much privilege do I really have?
Yeah.
And Joe brought up a very good point to me where he goes, in all those times, and it made me realize, I go, oh, I was never scared that I could die.
Yeah, nobody
like,
ever.
Never once was I like, oh, they're going to shoot me.
Yeah, yeah.
Even when I had guns drawn on me from police, I was like, fucking put them away.
Yeah, yeah. We're all cousins here.
Yeah, like what? Yeah. And he, like talking with him so much and actually like being around it. Because I grew up around athletes. Like I grew up around, like I was always the minority because I grew up in locker rooms and stuff. Yeah. So to me, it never clicked that I had this privilege because I was like, well, it's all these guys are the starters and these guys have full scholarships and I'm paying for school and this, that. So I like manipulated it in my mind to where I was like, I'm the one struggling. Yeah, yeah.
No, the economic thing too is like, I grew up broke. I didn't come from nothing too, you know? So, but that's like,
that's
not the same.
And so it is.
It's the first impression. Like the first impression of me gets me so much further.
There's so many times I went to court and because I was pre-law, I was always told you respect the courthouse, you respect the judge, you always wear a suit. Yeah. All the times I went to court, every single time I walked into a courtroom, I would always wear a suit and they would always say, counselor, what case are you representing?
That's hilarious.
And
that's
it's like, hilarious. That's, and that, but that's so true.
That's
to your
such
point.
Deep
it's like,
racism. That's
it's
crazy.
It's so ingrained that's in people crazy. Where it's like, oh no, I'm a defendant.
Yeah.
So I want to, because we have time for a couple, you got to come back on.
Oh yeah, dude, anytime.
We got to one of the stories that you sent me. Yeah. I do want to ask you about the mom's wedding thing. Just because that
so
kind of ties into the B&E of the whole experience.
Yeah, so my mom gets remarried in 2005 or 6 or something like that. I'm at the height of my drinking. I'm partying up in New Paltz, is close to where I grew up, this college town. Partying one night, I meet this girl at the bar and we hit it off and I say, "Hey, my mom's getting married in 2 weeks. Do you want to come to my mom's wedding?" So I bring this stranger to the wedding, and to this day, if you look through my mom's wedding album, it's me and this girl, and underneath my mom hand wrote, "Will we ever see her again?" question mark. So that's the kind of that's where I was at as a person when this happens. Go to the wedding. It's like it's a nice simple kind of day, like it was a church wedding and then a party at the firehouse in town. And I'm boozing all fucking day. I've got this girl who I think is cool and hot and whatever. Something goes awry with her because we try to go after party somewhere else, and she ditches for good reason. I'm glad she did. Like, I hope she got home safe. I've never seen her again, so we never did see her again. And somehow I end up in the town bar next to the firehouse with my mom, her new husband, some of my aunt. Like, one of my aunts is one of my best drinking buddies. I should have this conversation with her sometime for a podcast. Anyway, it's me, my mom, and my new stepdad. We're closing down this town bar called O'Dwyer's in my tiny little town. And I was like, hey, let's walk home because it's like 6 blocks home, but let's go past where I went to nursery school. I want to show Bill, where I went to nursery school. We end up sitting behind this church in the grass outside the windows of the nursery school that's under the church. And I'm like, I can get us in there. And Bill's like, oh yeah. I'm like, yeah, let's break into the church. And he's like, well, so what do you do? I was like, we just check doors. There's always an open door.
Check doors and windows.
And I'm like, we could slide in. Let's just check it out. I want to see. I haven't been in there in 20 years since I was a 5-year-old. Let's do it. And my mom starts weeping. She's like, what is even going on? Why are we here? It's my wedding night. Like, I took my mother on her wedding night hostage. Like, hammered.
Mom, this is going to be fun. Come on, let's go.
Just because I figured out that I guess maybe he wanted to drink more too. I don't know. I don't know how it happened, but we're sitting there, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning, just the three of us. Me trying to pitch them on breaking into a fucking church.
And he's trying to be like, yeah.
So luckily it did not happen. But I guess I brought that up because I've never told that story. But it just feels like such a good example of like the manipulative like part. Like, don't ever want the party to stop. I always wanted these things to be like these epic experiences. So Anyway, I like the timing of the light going out was like
that wasn't planned.
Just
at all.
Like theatrical, like me being fully ashamed of.
That was I charged these before, but the problem with having portable lights, as you know, working in production, it's like sometimes they just die.
Yeah, they're cool lights.
Thank you, dude. Plug everything one more time.
Yeah, so my special is called Qualification. I also have a podcast called We Hired a Sitter for This. That's my wife and I. We've done 204 episodes.
Oh shit!
Nobody has seen.
We'll put in the show notes.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So there's the podcast. She's great. I met her in the room. She's sober and funny. We have a kid. We talk about parenting, life, whatever. It's just a chat show. Specialist Qualification. Then the documentary. Please check out this documentary. It's on you. The first 20 minutes is on YouTube. It's called Tom Dustin Portrait of a Comedian.
Dude.
I'm excited. I'm Instagram at It's Patrick Holbert.
Perfect, dude.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. At Brennan T. Comedy on all social media, BrennanTComedy.com. Got dates in New York through September, and then I'll be in Denver at the end of the month, 26th and 27th, for 6 shows at the Denver Comedy Lounge. Come check it out. That's it. Boom.
Amazing. Dude, thanks so much.
Thanks for coming on. This was great. This was a lot of fun.
I would love to do it again.
You have so many stories.
Yeah.